Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome to the Deep Dive. We are going to break down the NBA draft prop market for you today. Getting this pod up on Wednesday night so you can listen to it onto your commute on Thursday morning. The draft will be tomorrow, Thursday, June 21st, the summer solstice. NBA draft, it comes on you quick. We sought out one of the sharpest minds in the gambling Twitter space specifically for hitting the draft prop market. And this guy's got some incredible stories. He is clearly an advantage better, and I think you guys are going to love hearing some of his insight, not just about NBA draft props, but about the offshore market and the offshore betting space in general. And with that, I welcome to the pod, famous from his appearance in the movie Rounders, Joey Dish. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
What's happening, fellas? How are you guys, man? Hyped to be here.
And Andy, you excited for the NBA draft at all?
Yeah, like when you started talking about it, I was really sure it was next week. Like in the midst of, well, we just had U.S. Open, World Cup, all the to-do with, you know, there's a lot of baseball and everything else going on. And like, shit, that is right now. So, yeah, we spent a lot of time on Twitter today reading everybody's conspiracy theories and a bunch of garbage articles and
so much misinformation.
Like, I feel like I'm dumber.
Gotta have the woe notifications on.
Good call. So let me give you, first of all, welcome again, Joey. Welcome. And first important question for you: did you ever get that blowjob from Chrissy Turlington?
She's still holding out on me. I'm taking reasons. I hit a few more draft props. Maybe we'll be back. But
if you do not get that joke, go back 30, and watch Rounders.
If you're under 30, you need to maybe hit the whale up on Twitter and post that YouTube clip.
Yes, go back and watch Rounders. If you like this podcast, if you like gambling Twitter, you will absolutely love the movie Rounders. It's probably the best recommendation you'll get from this whole pod if you've never seen it before. But more importantly, I've loved your coverage of the NFL draft. You had some outstanding insight from not just what you posted publicly, but other messages I got, and kind of your sharing your thoughts and your process with the gambling community. So first and foremost, thank you for all your insight for the NFL draft. And then interestingly enough, you got into the NBA prop market, and some fascinating things happened with one of the online shops where you like to do business.
Yeah, no, that was it was a RIP my five dimes account yesterday, man. So that was pulling one out for old Tony getting me and I'm out. So, but other than that, the prop market's still alive and well elsewhere. But yeah, it's no more five dimes props for me at the moment.
Oh man, so I don't think anyone that knows you, talk to you, would not disagree. You're an advantage prop market better. And this has always been something that's kind of fascinated me because I mostly operate in NFL market, sides and totals. I'm not betting first halves. I'm not doing props. I'm in the NBA market, sides and totals, full game. And I'm betting tennis, which is like the second biggest market in the world. So like I'm in this enormous pools, you know, with dealing with these kind of dynamic marketplaces. And I don't ever really get to, you know, to dabble in what you guys are in with these smaller markets and these specialized areas. How did you first get into this?
So first start, I mean, I'll give you the conditioning, you know, after I saw the Rounders movie, I was like, so as soon as it was over, I was like, this guy embodies everything I've ever wanted to be in life. With grinding and doing whatever he can to make a buck. So it probably started, I'd say, call it four-ish years ago. You know, it's cabin football, always been in love with the draft from a young age. And it's 3-4 years ago is when the draft prop market started to maybe get a little bigger. Before it kind of hit the last 2 years and has absolutely blown up. But it, once you hit that 3-4 year span, you started to get a little bit of more prop information. It kind of got hooked. It kind of put together the two loves I had of gambling and draft, and being able to do research on the players and look back and see what's available out there, shopping in different lines. So it kind of, it's been kind of a run to lead up to now, to where it started with drafts and has now become, you know, advantage prop on every single prop you could possibly think out there. And I think it's like we talked about a little bit, once regulation now opens up even more out, I think we've kind of seen a wave of where the prop market isn't just a side piece, it can actually be somewhat of a reasonable market in the overall space.
That's a great point.
A few years ago with the, just like a real big example, everybody will know like Super Bowl props. And that, you know, it always was a thing, but in the last few years, it's almost gotten out of hand, in my opinion, I guess.
It's absolutely blown
up. The one book had like over 1,000 props. Like, how are they taking, like, why are they taking the time and doing that first off? But yeah, it is crazy just looking. I use 5 dimes. I'm not good enough to get shut out quite yet, but any given night in any sport, you click on the props section, and I mean, just like basketball, points, rebounds, assists, combinations of them for 7-10 players in a game, and then just like 30 other things on every single NBA game is going to have that. It is kind of wild what the offshores offer now on basically every, and that's just one sport, like baseball, hits and runs, hits, runs, errors, players, hits, runs, football, everybody's passing yards, receiving yards, stuff like that. I can probably echo Whale's sentiment as far as, I guess I get a little more into first half and live betting than you do a little, but football, I mainly stick to sides and totals and maybe a few alternates and parlays, but because it just seems like maybe it's a little overwhelming with all the stuff you're looking at with the props.
Yeah, and so part of that is being, I would say that's where the baked-in advantage is when you have, if you're going to have that many offerings or that many different outs and options, capping that for a bookmaker or trying to set lines on, 500, 1,000 different Super Bowl props, especially if you're able to shop book to book, is where you can get a lot of either pricing advantage or number advantage that's going to come in to the prop market that you're not going to see on an NFL line or a market efficient college football or basketball line where everybody's going to be within, a half point or a point of each other, if not the exact same. Whereas, I mean, you pull up this NBA draft prop and you'll have 30, 50 dollar variance between sites on the exact same player or the exact same prop.
Well, yeah, you bring up a good point with, like, let's just say an NFL Sunday game. They open them up. You get your openers, the previous week. By the time you get to Sunday morning, when a lot of, let's just say the public bettors are hitting it, that market has defined itself.
Like, it's that market, fully mature. Yeah, fully mature.
It has completely shaped itself. Whereas a lot of those props, they're not coming out. I guess maybe you'd know this better than me. When is the first time you can bet a prop? Let's say a player's stat total on an NFL game. When are those first coming out for a Sunday noon game, 1 o'clock game for your time?
It'll depend on the book. I hate to say, but one of the books that's a little bit more comfortable that putting them out earlier is 5 dimes. But even on the square books, whether it be Sportsbook or Bravada, a lot of times they're waiting until, at best the day before, if not morning of game day, before they're offering even anything that's remotely available hit. And a lot of times it's baked in with extra juice. So, the player pop offering are going to vary book to book. I'd say the sharper the book, maybe the more comfortable they are offering more or offering a little bit in advance.
That makes sense. Do you see a difference too if it's a primetime game versus just a 1 of 8, early Sunday game?
I mean, I think the bigger the game, like a Monday night football game, is going to offer more props than, your typical middle, if it's, Bills, Dolphins on a Sunday at 4 o'clock. You'll have your smaller selection for the middle Sunday games. The primetime games, whether it be Monday night or obviously playoff or Super Bowl, is where you'll get that, additional expansion of, instead of 10 to 20 to 30 player props, you can have, 50 to 100 or more.
Interesting. You know what's interesting? This conversation is fascinating to me, and you reminded me of a lot of interesting angles on this. First and foremost, now that we're talking about legalization of sports betting across the states, you know, you made a good point when we were kind of prepping here. This is going to go hand in hand with the existing like fantasy infrastructure, and to a certain degree, like as much as fantasy daily fantasy is like. You know, what do you call it when you start smoking pot and the next thing you know you're doing
heroin? It's a gateway.
That's a gateway drug.
And boy, I mean, I was thinking that too. DFS and DFS markets, is a gateway.
It's a gateway to like being a full on degenerate sports bettor and like. The halfway point is like, you know, if you're doing DFS, you're already projecting these sort of things, like carry it directly over into the player prop market. And then the next thing you know, you got a bankroll at some offshore and you're like, well, you know, there's no way the Patriots aren't going to cover the 7.5 tonight, you know? And the next thing you know, like, oh, well, that's where all your money went. So I can totally see like there's an advantage.
You're running teasers and parlays.
There's no way all these teams are gonna lose.
You went from a $1.50 to a $500 teaser in 2 weeks.
There's gotta be some kind of advantage, at least, you know, to the degree that you're gonna introduce new bettors to sports betting, like offering them player props is gonna get a lot of people into the market, I gotta guess. You know, carry them over from daily fantasy. I don't like look down my nose at daily fantasy by any stretch of the imagination, but I certainly think there's a lot more interest for me in sports betting and handicapping than there is daily fantasy. But with that said, do you think that there's a difference in a bookmaker trying to set a number for a player prop? Is he actually trying to come close to and get a reasonable prediction, or is he like with the NFL line and spread and the total, is he trying to get two-way action on that prop?
So it's going to, I would say one, it's going to depend on the prop. And two, you're always going to see the prop market will move a lot quicker on a line than any market line that's out there for an actual line on a game. So, you know, whereas if you're talking an NFL market line that's going to be hit on Sunday, the amount of money it takes to move that line or the total is going to be, you know, 100, 1,000x of what it would be, you know, to move a prop. You know, if it's over 8.5 yards receiving, a couple of hits, max hits on that, it's going to move the line significantly. So when a bookmaker's setting a line, at least from what I've seen, is you'll start out with, you know, maybe there's some speck of modeling around with numbers in a game, whether it be receiving yards or points in a basketball game, but they'll let the market move it reasonably quickly with the action one side or another, and they can make the juice, you know, in a small smattering of bets so high that it's either going to get you some action on the other side or basically kill the action on the prop.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think a good example would be probably the progression of LeBron James' total points scored in a game over the course of the playoffs, and even just the course of the finals.
It was unbelievable.
Some of the numbers they had to put up, because if they were putting up 30, 29.5, 31, somewhere in there, they were getting killed. Just everybody in their system would bet that over.
I mean, you saw sportsbook hit 11.5, I believe, one game where it's used to be over.
Yeah, game 7 against the Celtics, I think it was 40, right? Or 39.5. Yeah, it was incredible. Unbelievable. Let me ask you about limits and juice a little bit. Is there an inherent advantage to being willing to lay juice on props because the average person out there is scared away from like a -135, -150 kind of a line on a prop?
Potentially. I mean, it'll depend on the prop and where it's at. I'll give you one example of DeAndre Ayton, who, let's say, was right after the lottery finished up. And I believe he was trading around you know, minus 200, minus 300 is where I had made my original bets on him at BOL. Get it in at that number where, you know, you're the prop market, you have people that are looking to, you know, occasionally get plus 250, plus 500, plus a 1,000 on a cheap prop. Whereas if you're willing to lay a little bit juice on something that's more of a known outcome, again, it's going to depend on what it is, but it's potentially there for you. But again, structure of the prop, what it is. And if you're able to do, you know, quick probability change in your head of what percentage that is, or do, you know, with the information you have, it really going to depend on the prop and the price.
Interesting. Let's come back to
We may have laid some heavy juice on the first, what was it, the first pick of the second day in the NFL draft?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I can't even remember what the juice was, but it was we'll be an offensive player or something. And
they were taking a lineman. We were very sure.
There was zero doubt, and the juice was like, what, minus 300 or minus 350 or something, and yeah, I didn't even hesitate. Well, I'll come.
You
laying
that minus 4,000 on LiAngelo Ball?
Might be a little. And like going back, I actually have bet online open right now, and you know whatever you said, you got on Ayton, it's 2,500 now.
Yo, geez, that's what I was going to ask later. Yeah, you going to come back on that at all?
Not at this point. I mean, you would say at all indications right now, he's going to be the number one pick. I would say next to a foregone conclusion outside of just being announced. If you look at some of the things that transpired over a few weeks, number one being he did one workout. It was for the Suns. Had some cheeky quotes about knowing he's the number one pick. He doesn't need to work out for anybody else. The Suns insider, the number one guy who's put out stuff for their org over the last couple of years. I'd have to look up his name. But basically said as soon as they got the number one pick, said it's a foregone conclusion, hasn't shied away from that. It's basically continually being steamed to this point. Not that you should really pay too much attention to prop steam, but I'd say at this point, it's if you want to put it at 99% or next to a lock, that it's going to be Ayton without something absolutely drastic happening here in the next 24 hours.
What's the 1% that the Spurs trade Kawhi Leonard to the Suns and for the number one pick?
Oh, that was a hot rumor. Apparently that was happening the other day.
I saw it reported.
On Five Times. But, again, I hesitate to ever call a draft pick a lock at any point until it's officially announced. But there's really every indication in the world that it's going to be Ayton. I'd say, who knows? Somebody comes with a Godfather offer if they want to trade him at the last minute. You know, it's crazier things maybe you could say have happened, but it's going to be Ayton.
What was your favorite hit from the NFL draft, out of curiosity?
Favorite hit from the NFL draft? Well, you had a couple of, say the large ones were Mayfield, when we had a plus 10 and a plus 16-1. Small money, but it was right where that shift happened. Probably I'd say it was around 3 days before the draft where the word started to come out. You had the Schefter tweet. It started to feel more real. And before books were able to fully adjust to the information that had come out, there were still a lot. I mean, I remember that DSI had 3 days before had like a Mayfield 27-1. and so it's really like even 3 to 5 days before the draft, he was still trading almost 10-1 or better almost everywhere. And then as you got, within 48 hours, within 24 hours, all of a sudden the price shifted where he's gone from 10-1, 15-1 down to, getting close to even money to be an odds on favorite.
Yeah, I remember it was like there was like a Mary Kay Cabot tweet that the Browns were down to Mayfield and Josh Allen, and it was like, oh, I guess they're taking Mayfield. and it was about three. Yeah. It was about 3 weeks out. Yeah, I remember that too. Days out. Yeah, that was a good hit, man. 16-1.
No, that was good. Yeah, nice. That was, I would say that the easiest one we'll say was Sportsbook put up Lamar Jackson versus Mason Rudolph head to head, and they started it at -110 even juice. And so that was quite a lot.
Wow.
If Mason would have went before Lamar, you might have not heard from me because I'd be underwater somewhere. But no, that was, you know, it depends. You get, and that's one of the things when you're shopping around the prop market, you get every once in a while, you'll get something that, you know, so I remember that closed, like, you know, minus 500, minus 700 or something like that. The McGlinchey one was another one, the Notre Dame lineman, where it was Notre Dame players drafted.
That was such a bad line. Oh, that line was so bad.
I think Dimes put it up minus 245. Was
right. You're right. I remember it so well. And that closed at about minus 1,200 or something.
Well, more than that, I think.
Yeah, some places were even higher than that.
Got up in the close to 2,000, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody just hit it. And it's like, I think anybody who hesitated and thought like that one of those guys wasn't going in the top 15, there was just such a weird line to put out.
It was. They were the top two linemen. Like, it was basically over under 1.5 linemen will be drafted in the first round. That was a ludicrous line. I still don't understand what they were thinking. But there was a lot of ludicrous lines in the NFL draft. Some of the stories from Gil Alexander were pretty unbelievable. Of what they hung at Will Hill in Vegas, and then how they tried to circumvent paying him were pretty remarkable.
The phrasing was horse shit.
Yeah, how does that go down when you get on the wrong side of a bookmaker? Just you've been taken into the cleaners in a small market like this.
I mean, basically, what I would say is the number one thing, whether it be offshore books or Will Hill and Vegas, is the number one thing that can get your account limited or banned is the prop market. There's a hypersensitivity to it in the offshore market. In, I don't know if it's because of the advantage where you're not, it doesn't have the same market efficiency, but yeah, I've seen it from Bovada, from Sportsbook, obviously what happened to me at Dimes. If you continually are an advantage player on props, at some point your account is either going to get limited or banned. It's kind of the nature of the prop business right now, and playing props consistently. And it's what I mentioned earlier for, you know, if you're a recreational bettor and you keep, you know, 80, 90% or more of your bankroll at one out, there's some inherent risk of playing props on the regular. It would be a recommendation where I would only dabble or basically be small time in the props, because it, like I said, if it's going to happen at some point, if you're playing player props, draft props, coaching hire props, if you're betting them large or betting them consistently, at some point every book is going to have enough and put you on some type of limit or just ban your account.
Yeah, so effectively, I guess, would this be a reasonable kind of ratio? Like, if you have 90% of your bankroll at one book, like, only make about 10% or so of your units staked in the prop market? Or if you are going 100% of your units staked in your prop market, only have 10% of your bankroll there?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you, for me, I keep accounts at, I mean, I'd have to even add it up at this point, a large number of offshores, but most of those have quite a small balance, to where if I'm playing the advantage prop market, you've got to shop everywhere for the most part. I mean, the best way to do it is to have as many outs as possible, because you never know, like in this instance for the NBA draft, who's posting what price they're going to post at. Does it vary from book to book? But at the same time, like I mentioned, the risk that comes with trying to play advantage props is the ramifications that can happen to your account. So I'll keep small bankrolls at, 15 plus books. But at the same time, you can't have that risk of having, so much of your, look, for instance, my five dimes wagers now, A, I don't have access there to the outs, and B, the money I had tied up there is now basically pended to be graded, and then I can withdraw it. But that portion of my bankroll now is essentially frozen at the moment.
Yeah, well, this is a layup question, but how do you move money around?
I mean, well, basically cryptocurrency changed the game. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, that this really, this type of wagering or this type of shopping really wouldn't have been possible. But if you want to be an offshore player that shops book to book with high regularity or high frequency, I mean, getting into crypto is a must. It doesn't mean you have to be, you know, an expert in the market, but you basically, you know, you have to have a wallet and you have to be comfortable with the withdrawal deposit of basically on the regular.
Yep. Great advice. Great life advice regardless.
Another great thing about the crypto, and you said, you know, you use, there's other ones that have this, but Sportsbook is a favorite of mine where I play a lot of futures there. We talked about that a little off air. And if, and I don't keep that balance very big. I will not use that for basically anything outside of some future bets. So often I'll take money out of a different book to put it into Sportsbook, and they have a 20% bonus on every Bitcoin deposit. So, yeah. I mean, it takes a few days to move things around, but everything you deposit in there is, you know, there's rollover requirements, but it's not like I'm moving it in there and not going to bet it. It's going on.
No, for sure.
Even just moving money around, your own, you know, moving money from one book to another, you can garner some cute little bonuses like that. It all adds up.
Absolutely. My only warning there would be just make sure you really read the fine print on the bonus requirements. If you're going to be moving money frequently, like I'm frequently moving money book to book.
So do you just forego bonus?
I would, at most books, yes. Because a lot of them, whether it be like
some of the rollovers are one
that has some of the absurd requirements. Where if you're only going to have your money there, you know, if you're uploading, you know, 500, 1,000 books just to hit it, you know, for some draft props over the course of a week, or, you know, make one large bet on a game for, you know, some basically a smattering of player props, then, you know, you're not going to want to then deal with a rollover on the back end, depending on how often you're using the book. I mean, there's some books where I'm only, you know, touching base with them, you know, once a month, once every couple months based on what they offer. So I don't want to have to deal with then having to slam out that rollover after to get my money back out.
That makes total sense. I got a couple more questions and then I want to move on to the draft. But thought on crypto. It's got to make up a pretty decent amount of what people are actually using crypto for at this point, right? Like the transactions where you're actually, you know, I mean, obviously like exchanges and people who are just swapping coins for coins and all of everything that's going on in that space is probably like 95% of transactions. But like of what's actually being transmitted to like and converted to US dollars and as a, you know, person to business transaction, sports gambling has to be a pretty sizable portion of that. And I was wondering do you think like, because I was talking to a buddy about this when the Warriors were about to get their third championship, everyone I knew who was in the crypto space had a Warriors outright future, right? People were sitting there with crypto waiting to bet the Warriors at the best price possible, knowing with full confidence that they were going to win the title, they were just picking off prices all season long. And there must have been so much crypto investment tied up in Warriors futures. And I was sitting there thinking like, man, are we going to see like a shift in price as everyone tries to convert their like crypto winnings to US dollars after the Warriors futures finally crash? And I mean, there was a slight dip, and you know, granted, it was probably more likely related to like some hack or you know, or some exchange getting something like flagged by China or Korea or something. But still, like I kind of wondered, like you know, and the prices of crypto obviously affect like how you operate in this space. But as just a general question, like how much time do you kind of build into like getting money moved around and deposited and withdraw at this point? You've done it enough that you can pretty much count on it in like an hour or so.
So it's going to depend on the book. You know, some are better than others with payouts, you know, 24-hour payouts. Most of them are going to have your crypto to you in a couple of days at worst. I would say, you know, we had talked earlier, a book like Sportsbook that used to have massive payout issues.
And I remember a couple years ago, they got getting a check payout from them that took 6 weeks. It came from like a Canadian real estate quote unquote company.
But then I came
to the bank and get cashed, which they, you know, I remember going to the bank because it was from Canada. You know, they're giving me some double looks, but it's U.S. funds. So to go from that a few years ago where, you know, the book's getting a D rating and you're having to worry about, you know, six,
am I ever going to see this
money? So basically right now where, you know, same book that was one of the worst for payouts 2 years ago is now, you know, basically functioning as efficient as any of the A books that are out there. So it's been one, a game changer for offshore betting in general. And then two, helping, you know, revolutionize some books that had payout issues in the past that, you know, you wouldn't have recommended as a book to use, you know, 48 months ago, to where now it's kind of become, as long as the book has somewhat of a, you know, a reasonable reputation, if they're using crypto, then it's pretty much good to go.
Yeah. I love it.
It used to be something to get a payout. This was way back. I'm trying to think how long ago this was, because I can remember where I lived, and that makes it at least like 8-9 years ago. And I hit a massive NFL parlay, and I said, "Oh, I'm taking this in cash. You know, I'm gonna cash out on an online book." And they're like, "Oh, it'll be about 6 to 8 weeks, and in the meantime, that balance will still reflect all that money. So you can wager that. We'll just cancel the check if you go into hock." you sons of bitches! You know me. You know what I'm gonna do. I ended up having to just not bet sports for like 6 to 8 weeks.
Back in the day.
I'm done. Otherwise, I'm going to spend it. Like, I want this money.
This is the craziest cash out story I had back in the day. Like, I was in college in sports betting, and I needed to get Super Bowl winnings out so I could pay for a spring break. And I tried to cash out, and I got in the mail like a check from China. Right, that was all in Chinese, and they had like driven over it with like a truck, and it was like had truck tires all over the front of it, and like so it looked like so fraudulent. Like I had like found something on the street, and I was trying to walk in and cash it, and like I walked in, and this was like in 2003 or something, and I walked into my bank to try to cash this thing, and I was sweating bullets. I was like, man, I'm gonna get busted for fraud. Like all this shit is illegal. Like I'm not supposed to be betting. Like I can't tell my parents about this. Like I was like, oh man, this is so bad. But I need this money so much, or I can't go on spring break. And eventually, like they were like, we're gonna hold on to this for a couple days, and we'll let you know if it clears. And eventually it cleared and everything worked out, but I'm sure they send you that shit just to intimidate you. I hope you don't ever take it to the bank, right? I mean, like, it was the intimidation tactics are absolutely crazy, which brings me to my last question about this, and then let's talk about the draft. What the hell is wrong with these guys? Why in the world would Five Dimes be acting like a bully when we're talking about people who must be crypto rich, right? Like the books and the offshore books have to have had a financial windfall like no other over the last couple of years, based on the fact that they were some of the earliest adopters for taking Bitcoin. I guarantee you they stockpiled some. They didn't convert it all to US dollars right off the bat. No fucking way. So these guys must have had a financial windfall. Like, why do they still act like dickbags and like try to push off advantage bettors? Like,
jeez, how do you really feel?
I'm annoyed by this. Like,
he's savage right now.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, if you're operating on a relatively thin margin in Vegas or something, and like, you know, you have a sports book there that is making a teeny amount of the profit of the whole casino, it's the same sort of thing. Like, you're getting people in there to bet on the slots. Like, why do you care? Why do you want to bully, and why do you want to be a jackass to the bettors? Is it an ego thing? Is it really important to their bottom line that they don't, you know, take action from winning bettors? Or, you know, what do you think is going on here?
I mean, so to speak to, at least from what I know of Five Dimes specifically, is they have an issue
with one prop betting, two incorrect lines. And those two things kind of, I would say, correlate. If you are a bettor who likes to either take advantage of openers, or if a mistake line's out there and you're hitting it, I mean, basically, I had quite the long track record of one or two mistake lines over at Tony's book.
Yeah, they don't like that.
And, no, they don't. No, they don't. And I think these NBA props were probably the last straw. But whether to speak to it, and just from that perspective, it's whether it's prop betting, whether it's openers, whether it's just advantage players all around. I don't know. I don't know why it seems, even when, like you said, with a small margin, of why there can't be a little bit more leeway given. It would be nice, but most books are going to either limit or ban winning players at some point over the course of your betting career.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you got to figure it's like 100 people go to a grocery store every week, and 99 of them are paying for their groceries, and you're walking in and you got a coupon for free groceries. And they said, well, we'll just take the other 99 people. You can fuck off and find a new grocery store. I think they just have the numbers where they're like, we don't care if obviously they don't care if transcripts get out. I mean, you just go on some forums or anywhere, or you can see, like, Tony will straight up just write emails or DM people and write some pretty hateful stuff. And obviously he doesn't care that, because he knows, like, no. if I put this in writing, it could get out.
Yeah,
right. They don't care. There's enough fish in the barrel to keep them afloat where they can get rid of any sharks.
Interesting. Well, let's get to the shark action then. So let's not use five dimes lines for this experience. We'll give some shine to some of the other books. We talk about five dimes too much without getting paid anyway. What did you think of the props that were offered overall for the NBA draft? Was there anything that you were searching for that you couldn't find? I noticed that they didn't hang matchups really anywhere that I looked.
Nobody has them yet.
Yeah, what did you think of the offer of the options this year?
I'll be honest. After that, maybe I had my expectations a little too high after the NFL draft and the absolutely massive offering we had for that. You know, you've kept waiting and waiting to kind of see a little bit more. And I would say, I mean, even in the last 24 hours, you've finally gotten some, you know, players outside of what would be, you know, the top five, the top 10, where they've got some lines on. But I'd say it's been moderately disappointing. At the same time, you know, the NBA draft just isn't even on remotely the same level as the NFL draft in terms of popularity, in terms of panel the books are going to get on it. So maybe it makes sense that it's a touch more limited, but I was still maybe coming off that we'd see a little bit more than we have now. But it doesn't mean there's still not a little bit of advantage out there.
Of course. Okay. Cool. What were some of your initial thoughts as you got into it? Like, did you look at the numbers purely first, or did you try to kind of separate yourself from what was hanging and just try to kind of comb sort of the information space? And can you identify a couple of kind of key people in the process of doing that?
So I'll give you a couple of – look, when I'm analyzing a draft, I'll give you a couple of the – rudimentary things that if you're going to be playing draft props that are absolutely critical. The number one, hands down, like I would say mistake I see people make, whether they're betting draft props or trying to analyze a draft, is they let too much of their personal bias in regards to a player affect what they're betting. So that's why, I mean, I had a tweet on this, you know, when I was talking the NFL draft. When you're betting, it is 100% you need to be predicting what the team or the organization will do and their pattern of behavior, not what you think. You need to pretty much leave out any bias you have towards a player when you're either making a bet or analyzing where he's going to go. You know, people have asked me, like, my specific specific opinion on a player, and I'm fine to give it to them. That can be entertaining, but in the end, that doesn't matter. What matters is you're trying to forecast behavior and pick up on patterns of information to then make an educated guess or hopefully a profitable wager on what you actually is going to happen.
That's pretty strong.
So like, I'll correlate that to like Michael Porter is the guy who, I mean, I'll give him my personal opinion. I'm not a fan. He's got a checkered injury history. I haven't loved his game from what I've seen on the floor. At the same time, the fact that he's had such limited exposure for people to poke holes into him, you've heard him going a little higher than what was, originally forecasted, I'd say 3 weeks ago. Now, maybe that's cooled here in the last 24 hours, but, that's a guy I wouldn't put anywhere in my personal draft. I wouldn't put anywhere near the top 10. If I'm forecasting where he's going to go, you have to take the information that's out there and what you're hearing and what you're analyzing from whether the sources of information you use or the big, information guys in the media and on Twitter, Woj and Shams and that. And then build that together to make a credible wager of what you're doing on the draft.
That makes a ton of sense. I'll circle back on that point in a second because there's a guy that I feel like is being affected the other way, where people like him as a sleeper. They think he's going to be outstanding, and I think that's led to some, potentially, or maybe you totally disagree. Let's just talk about it right now.
Is he Slovenian?
No. Let's talk about the Slovenian first. Yeah. So we covered Aiden. I think it's pretty I agree with you. It's foregone conclusion. We just have to wait until tomorrow and it'll be the first pick, which puts the Kings on the clock at pick two. And the Kings have been doing some fascinating kind of disinformation, I would say, or some kind of mixed signaling over the last, 6 hours. To me, it seems like they want to trade down and get Doncic at a lower pick than two. You'll hear certain things like, oh, well, the owner's daughter only follows Marvin Bagley on Instagram, right? Did you see that? They have some deal in place for X, Y, and Z. What do you make of what you've heard of what the Kings are looking at at the two slot?
So the latest, 24 to 48 hours, it still has Marvin Bagley as the guy. If I'm setting a line, would be your odds-on favorite. The number one source of information, if we're going to talk NBA draft, you have to give it to Draft Express. So when I'm talking about sources that I'm going to pay attention to for NBA draft, if I'm ranking them, Draft Express is number one. They've had the longest history of credibility. They're tied in with ESPN now. And so Gavoni and Woj, I kind of have what I would say, they've been doing almost a correlation when it comes to draft information that's out there. So you've got two power players that are kind of now connected like that. Coupled with that, there was been somewhat of a longstanding Divac doesn't love Doncic. That pattern of information you heard from the Kings kind of starting months ago that I'm not sure they ever really wavered too far from. Would I lay a bunch of juice right now to say that, the prices that are out there, that it's going to be Bagley? No. At the same time, with the latest Woj reports that the earliest we'll see Doncic is probably number three to Atlanta, unless and kind of what the caveat there has to be is with that information of Atlanta kind of centering him and maybe making him number one on the board out there, does somebody offer the Kings some type of godfather offer to jump to two to then take Doncic, knowing that it's looking like he's likely for the time being at three?
Interesting. Do you think there's any chance that the Kings are the ones that are floating that, though? That the Kings are the ones saying that the Hawks have Doncic.
We're getting into the weeds we did with the NFL.
And listen, there's always, you can always look at the flip side of the coin. to me, if you're going to get information, you look at the longstanding credibility of the person that's providing it and how accurate they've been in regards to that organization. So
the Atlanta information
came from Woj. You have to give him that. I mean, there's not too many people in really any sport that are more plugged in from he is. So am I going to say absolutely 100% that's lock stock? Atlanta's going to know, but I would lend that more credibility than you would if it's coming from, you know, an outside source.
Good stuff. So let's for projecting purposes, let's pretend like we know it goes Aiden, Bagley, Doncic. There's no trade. Because I haven't actually really heard anyone who's got enough assets and is high enough in the draft at this point who really, really wants Doncic enough to move up to two. So let's just assume that Sac can't find a partner and they take Bagley. Sitting at four, we got Memphis. And I've seen a lot of the Memphis beat writers, guys like Chris Verno and some of the local guys, are pretty high on Wendell Carter. Have you caught wind of that, and do you think you could see Carter go four, or do you think there's someone else they have targeting?
Carter's a guy who's caught a lot of late buzz here, and this is another one, you know, having to leave my personal opinion out. He's a guy you started seeing in the 7-8 range, you know, leading up a couple weeks ago to where now, you know, the last 24 hours, you're hearing buzz. Does he go as high as fourth Memphis? I think four is that first point in the draft. If it goes, you know, 1, 2, 3, Ayton, Bagley, Doncic, where you bring in the possibility of a trade. You heard some Knicks rumors today that were confirmed by Savoni that they're possibly talking to Mo Bamba about that they would make a move up to four to come grab him to get them above Dallas, which it has him, you know, Bamba mocked at five in a lot of places. So I'd say four is the point in the draft where it gets the most interesting in terms of the variance right now of what could happen.
Interesting. Do you think
on the chalkboard where you start going 100 different directions?
Yeah.
I looked at so many different scenarios of that, and that's where I quit. My mock draft goes to one.
That's the smart way to do it.
Let's say they're set on Carter. You know, you probably feel pretty good. You could trade out of that four spot and move back, you know, in that 6 to 9 range and still grab them.
The problem is if you slide all the way to 9, though, Cleveland's sitting there at 8, and we know they're trying to deal that pick. You kind of put yourself in. I don't think the Knicks can make a trade just because where they are at 9 after Cleveland at 8. They're screwed. No one wants pick 9. I don't think. And it's not because of, like, the number of talented picks or anything like that. It's just that, like, whatever guy you have targeted, if you're in the 9 hole, you are not likely to necessarily get that player. So that's tricky. Do you think Memphis and Dallas, do we have – and do you use this as an angle? Do they need big men? And that we're looking at, like, power forward center type of players because that's the position of need for them? And do you factor that in?
So there's some of that fact. I mean, I think the difference here is when you're talking about the guys that are, you know, possibly going in this position, whether it's a Jaren Jackson, a Mo Bamba, a Wendell Carter, they all have what you would call kind of a small forward, a guard skill set where they all project to be able to shoot out to range. They all can defend multiple positions. So, you know, in the sense of, like a traditional big, you know, when you're trying to assess his value, like a Robert Williams of Texas A&M, where, you know, he's got to play back to basket, he's got to rebound on that. I wouldn't have those same fears of saying that, you know, big men in the league are dead when you're talking about at least the guys, you know, in that top 8 to 10 range.
But we can feel pretty confident at least that Memphis and Dallas aren't looking for point guards, right?
Correct. You wouldn't assume that there's, you know, without a trade, you know, any possibility of, you know, Trae Young, Colin Sexton, Gilgeous Alexander in that 4 to 5 spot.
What do you think happens to Trae Young?
So, I mean, you've seen a ton of money in the last 24 to 48 of him falling. The projections are out there of him. I mean, the latest draft express had him going at, you know, all the way to
the Clippers.
Oh my goodness! Oh man!
I'm gonna say I don't want
they're
to completely
at, for the listeners. For the listeners, him. The Clippers are at 12.
Yeah, I had to scroll there. Jesus.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead, please.
No, I don't want to completely rule him out of Orlando at 6. I mean, the last 24 hours, it seems like they're leaning other places. But you factor in that Orlando probably has the worst guard play in the league. Nobody goes to basketball games in Orlando. You know, if you draft a guy, you know, like if Wendell Carter or Bamba falls there, it doesn't by any means bring the same, you know, the sex appeal and cachet and ticket selling of a guy like Trae Young. At this point, you'd have to, with the latest information, assume Young is falling. But, you know, if you're talking about a 6.5 prop, I'd still say Orlando is slightly in play for him.
If
he gets past that at 6, though, then
bye-bye.
You could be looking, unless someone's, you know, jumping up to grab him or to grab a point guard, then he could be in a little bit of a free fall.
Yeah, that's a great tip. So what I'm going to do after I get done with this podcast, I'm going to go find out who are the beat writers for the Orlando Magic and kind of get some sense if there's any buzz at all in the Orlando draft room about Trae Young. And for that matter, a guy like Sexton or Gildas Alexander, too. Like, if they're going to take a guard who's going to be doing a heavy bit of, handling the ball and shooting, it's probably going to be one of those three guys, right?
No, absolutely. And like you mentioned, Gildas Alexander, probably my favorite prop I hit today. And let me pull it up because I know it's real juice now. But Bovada dropped Gildas Alexander over under 13.5. You've gotten to the point now with the latest information in the mocks. Nobody has him falling past 13. So that was -150 when I played it earlier. I think the juice now has got it getting
320.
Over. Yeah, 320 now.
So by the time you listen to this podcast, it'll be about -1,000.
laying it at 320 is a little dicey now, but this is a guy that you've seen him. I mean, Draft Express has him going 8 to Cleveland. There's other potential that he could go. You know, Charlotte's had some talk with him, and there's really – would I see any chance that he gets past if the Clippers are going to keep their picks, either of them at 12 or 13? Probably not. So, and if you go process of elimination, one of the things that's easier to do with the NBA draft and the NFL is kind of take that realm of guys in a tier and say, all right, here's the top 13 guys in some order that we know, if I'm going to check all the boxes, are going to go in all likelihood in the top 13, he's in that cast of guys, whether it be, 9, 10, 12, 13 at this point, especially because you've heard some trade talk from teams outside that might be looking to move up to get him. I would put it right now as quite unlikely that he falls out of that 13 range.
And the question I would have then just be with the chaos that can ensue with trades and maybe a surprise pick. I guess the conventional thinking would be the further you get down on these props, you got Troy Brown Jr. over under 19.5, Hutchinson over 21.5. Are those – do they just become that much less bettable at all? Because even if you feel really good, there's just such a bigger variance once you get past the first 15.
No, absolutely. I mean, the variance is there. At that point, you start – I would say price shopping. At some price, there's a lot of cases where everyone's going to be worth a bet the farther you get down the draft. So if I look, what's up there right now, you see Aaron Holiday is a guy who's kind of caught some late steam in Bovada's post, and I believe BOL and Bovada have close to even right now under 21.5 is -130. I believe BOL had a -110. That's a guy that caught some late steam, some late interest. Draft Express moved them into the late teens. You kind of heard,
He had a late workout with the Knicks. I believe it was either today or yesterday, or at least the information dropped today. And so if he, you know, you start getting him in that range where if you can get now an under 21.5 and only have to pay, you know, a -110 or a -130, that's probably looking like a reasonably solid wager. And at the same time, if you're kind of getting it on the forefront of the information before the prop market sees a lot of money on it, there's always the chance to either buy off it at a different book or trade it back at a better price.
That's great advice, too. Does he not knock DiVincenzo out of the top 21 by any chance?
So DiVincenzo, he was one of the first he's been a guy I've been on probably the entire time. And that's a little bit where he was a guy who I thought was going to, you know, skyrocket. Before the season, he wasn't on anybody's first-round radar. And then with the performance he put in the national title game, coupled with his athleticism, coupled with the fact that shooting is at such a premium in the league right now, I think he's a guy that he would be the guy in the, you know, if we call it the 15 to 23 range, that it wouldn't surprise me if we went earlier than what anybody has him mocked at right now. You know, if somebody in that 15 to 20 range took a shot at him, like one area where the Bucks, a team that at 17, they need shooting. They're a little light on quality guard play. It's an area I wouldn't be totally shocked if you went at 17. Like NBA Draft.net has me going 18. I believe Draft has him 20. So that's a guy who, I mean, it's pretty juiced now. I gave out on Twitter under 22.5 when it first got posted at -120. And now most places are 21.5 with some serious juice. But
What do you make of Bovada has -200, but at another book, which we won't name.
Oh. I know which tab to open
that number. I saw the same 21.5 under was +100. I snapped that because I was thinking I agree. I 100% with your assessment. And I even kind of caught some feelers from listening to LA Sports Talk Radio and stuff that Jerry West kind of had, because Jerry West has influence in the Clippers organization right now. And I think you can draw some parallels to the Klay Thompson kind of, you know, Steph Curry type of contributions that they got early in their, you know, careers with the Warriors. Like, maybe he doesn't ever develop into that level of player, but like, you know, he's got that kind of, you know, potential to contribute on the Clippers. And they got two picks. They're picking 12, 13 back to back. As he goes to the Clippers at 12 or 13, will it shock me? Absolutely not. They need shooters, and you know, he kind of, you know, fits the mold of what they're trying to do with their team right now. So wouldn't blow me away. But I was shocked to see that you can get him still for a very favorable price at a book that would be fun to bet at if you weren't banned.
No, I would completely agree. I would be quite shocked if he fell past 20 at this point.
Yeah, okay, good deal. Another super interesting player to talk about, and this is one that I want to bring up with you since we decided to do the pod, really. I loved what you said at the beginning about how player perception can shape things, and I want to see if this is a workable angle. And I know that, like, there's news and information that probably throws some cold water on this. But Mo Bamba. Mo Bamba doesn't have an agent, okay? He turned down important workouts, right? At the same time, he is, like, the darling of, like, the draft nerds, right? Like, the hardcore basketball nerds love, like, his fluidity and his shot from the outside. They think this guy has the potential to be, like, a Joel Embiid type of guy. Like, he's got, like, a high ceiling type of buzz where you'll hear people gush about him on draft night, right? And, like, I want to think that that is shading people's perceptions when they put together mock drafts. Like, they're slotting him high because they think he ought to be, because they love his potential, whereas the flip side may actually be true, where because he doesn't have an agent, because he hasn't been building these relationships and doing the workouts he should be doing, there's a higher likelihood that he slides. Now, I know the Knicks news today throws all of this into chaos, because presumably they want him, But yep. Is there an angle on take? Because his prop was what, 5.5 or 6.5?
Most 5.5. Yeah, 5.5.
Does he go top five?
Let me touch on
everything that's happened with him. That makes me just scared to bet that one altogether.
It is. But you brought a great point in terms of like the draft nicks and what's out there and what's, you know, when you're looking at mock drafts, you need to really be sifting through if a guy is creating a mock draft to do what they think is going to happen, what their personal feelings are, what should happen, or are they using information they have or predictive information to focus on what they're trying to predict what's going to actually happen. I'd say like, you know, your mock draft, local team beat writers or like Bleacher Report and those, a lot of those mock draft, I mean, I don't want to rain down on them, but a lot of them are junk. They're just what that person who wrote it up would do, or they're not using information that's out there to put together, you know, a predictive mock draft. They're kind of doing what would be called, you know, I would say call it for fun. And that's where, so if we circle back to Bamba, the guy who I wouldn't know, you know, when the season ended, I would have said absolutely not as a top five. But if you're buying the workouts and his new stroke, the fact he's got a ton of polish, he's a real articulate kid, and the fact that it's not just one team that you've heard has some interest in moving up to get him. And I would say that, number one, you hear about the teams that have interest to move up to get a guy, that's usually a good indication that there's other teams that have interest, that it's just not public. So if you've got one or two teams that where, you know, somebody's dropped info that they want to move up to get this guy, it's probably a safe assumption that there's a decent amount of love from multiple teams about that player. So it's one of the, at the current prices, would I bet Bamba over under? No. I think there's a chance Dallas takes him. You know, he's mocked to Dallas in a lot of places, and there's too much of a chance that somebody moves up into that four slot. If the top three goes as we think, and, you know, there's not a 100% guy you take at four, that maybe Memphis is going to take a nice package at that point.
Okay, sounds like a stay away. He seems like the kind of guy you would float misinformation on if you wanted to get someone else to fall, right, or something like that, right? Like, because he doesn't have an agent, because and I don't even really know like how likely or how possible it is to move up into the top five. Like, I don't know enough really about like value of picks and who. You know, what a team like the Knicks, let's pretend like the Knicks go from four to, you know, 9 to 4. Like, what else do they have to give up to get that? Do they even have anything to give up to get that? Like, have they not learned their lesson that like not having draft picks is bad? You know, I want to be on the skeptical side when it comes to trades just because of this stuff. This sounds like maybe a good one just to stay away from. Are there guys that we haven't mentioned that you have particularly interesting feelings about? Like, have you gotten any action on Grayson Allen going first round?
So no action on that one. That's one that, you know, somebody tweeted me about that earlier, and I just told them to be careful on it. I wouldn't lay a bunch of juice on it. Was it a decent bet, you know, when it first started trading around plus 140, plus 160? Probably. But I know you had mentioned Gil Alexander earlier in VSiN, and I know he gave that out on one of the shows he did, and then all of a sudden it's got a bunch of steam, and now it moves to minus 160, minus 180. I believe there's been some bounce back. He's a guy who I put right on the fringe. When you're trying to do a personal evaluation of an NBA prospect, it's usually three things: age, athleticism, and can they shoot? You know, for Allen, he's a little older. He's not, I would call a plus. He's not a bad athlete, but I wouldn't call him a plus athlete. And then solid shot. I wouldn't call it, you know, I wouldn't put him in the elite shooter category. though, when you're, I would, you've seen him from, you know, in the 25 to 30 range, but if, I wouldn't, at this point, to me, I haven't.
Yeah, you've seen people. There are people got a big plus number, not a big plus number, but I seen plus 160, plus 180 out there. Yep. I guess. And granted, that's just in tweets. Like somebody said, they got that number. I can't confirm that, but just looking at Bovada right now, it's minus 200 to be in the first round.
So is this a better way to attack? Is this a better way to attack this then? Is over 5 Duke and Kentucky players selected in the first round a free roll at minus 155? Are you basically getting a free roll that Grayson Allen goes in the first round with that number? Because almost certainly you got two Kentucky guys and two Duke guys. There is a lot of buzz that Gary Trent Jr. goes in the first round. And so there's your 5 right there. And you basically, you need one, you know, and I guess is the no on this is plus 115. Is there really like a 45% chance that neither Grayson Allen nor Gary Trent Jr. get taken in the first round?
So this is one where, I mean, we discussed it a little bit earlier. I think at best you're pushing. I don't think Gary Trent is a first round player. And I know he's set at 30 and a half, I believe, his draft. At this point, yeah, I think on that.
That's indexed heavily to the over now.
Oh, is it? What's it at now?
I got it in European odds. It's 1.57.
Okay, so it's going up big time.
I mean,
okay.
you're talking plus minus 180.
Okay, yeah, it was about minus 130 about half an hour ago. So that's a lot of steam.
Minus 175.
Yeah, he's the guy. I believe Draft Express had him 43. Not a plus athlete. Okay. And that's really you're only talking about. You have a potential of 6 guys. So it's got to be Trent and Allen to cash that bet. I wouldn't advocate for, you know, taking the under by any means, but at this point, I think you've really, I want to say high level, set yourself up for a push at best. It would surprise me if Trent was a first round player.
Okay. Yeah, a really juicy over 4.5 would probably tempt me.
Yeah, so is the under a free roll, Bill? I mean, I guess I'm trying to think, like, if there's a big fat probability that this lands on 5, like, I kind of want to take a free roll shot on. Maybe I'll take the under since it's a plus million number. Interesting. Anyway, sorry.
Now, that's one where you've seen some, I would get just on this, to wrap it up, you've seen a little bit of over 5 action. It's Duke, it's Kentucky, it's players people know. Some of that plays into the prop market a little bit more than it would in any kind of standard, you know, wager on a game market. It's one where at some point, if you start getting in that, you know, plus 130, plus 150 range, then is it worth a shot? At that point, yeah. I mean, plus 115.
Okay, good call.
I'm still on the fence. But if it starts getting a little juicier, and that's where you can do some things with it too. If you get a better price on that under 5, then you could potentially then say, all right, well, I'll hedge some of that off with Trent to go in the first round, depending on what the price is.
Good point. Great point. Especially if under 30 ends up getting into that same ballpark. Oh, that's a great call. Scalp. Arbitrage.
My bookie still has it at minus 150 for its phrased differently. It says Gary Trent Jr. is not a first-round pick, minus 150. But, I mean, 25 cent different there. And it's like we always say, with any futures, win totals, anything long-term like that, props are, I mean, everybody said it here, I think, already. There can be some wild-ass differences from book to book. And if you have and if you have balances at a couple different books, sometimes there's pennies to be made for free. If you don't feel like getting involved and you find two lines that overlap and you can just sit there and bet both sides and make 5%, it's 5% you didn't have yesterday.
That's exactly right. Joey, have you seen any steam that has made zero sense to you? Can you almost always track steam down to some information that's real?
So what the props theme really, especially the closer you get to the draft, will move on a whim with the information that gets put out there, especially if it's a major guy. So when you saw the Doncic report hit, where that Atlanta had moved him to the forefront of their internal conversations, most of the books within half hour had pulled the Doncic and the Jaren Jackson prop, who people thought Atlanta was leaning towards, you know, a few days ago, and then reset basically the prices to almost reflect the inverse of now Doncic being in that pick and Jackson being basically an over 3.5 guy or a fourth or worse. I would say there hasn't been any, you know,
that's the steam train on the Doncic prop.
Yeah, that's me. That's the best timing ever.
Steam train on the Doncic prop. Take it down. Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
75 episodes, I think that's the second train that has gone by my office.
We'll leave that in.
Just because we've got such been somewhat of a limited amount of players, most of the steam has either been pretty correlated to where they're slotted in, you know, the quality mock drafts or the information that's been put out there so far. The craziest stuff I've seen was probably the early prices on Ayton and Doncic when the lottery first ended. Some sites were offering, it wasn't a pick per se, but at no point was I think that it was ever going to be anybody but DeAndre Ayton. But kind of to your point about the Bamba earlier with it being the popular draft pick or the popular Twitter player, there was a lot of Doncic love, among sites like the Ringer or other people that, our NBA draft people that have their own NBA draft account, that type of deal. Some of those places were essentially off market, but anything, in the last couple of days has been pretty standard.
I love it. Last prop question for you. Do you have any action on where LeBron James will play next year?
I got a little too much. So that was a big shock. So I'll tell you a couple of, one book that has a pretty a reputation for putting out some wild prop numbers is BetBSI. And so when they first put out their James regular season props, some of them were just wild. So let me pull it up here. I believe at James to go to Cleveland at 30-1 to remain in Cleveland and
what?
Rockets.
Yeah, oh, no, my God. 30-1?
And then Rockets at 10-1. And then I've since hedged off some of that on the Lakers. The one I haven't touched so far is Philly. That, is one of the destinations where a lot of people have said would be one of his, top four. I can't see that would make sense to that. No, I think at this point it's Cavs, Rockets, or Lakers, with obviously the Lakers are the betting market favorite, and I can't argue with that at the moment.
What? Sorry. Let's pretend like you got a limit wager on Cleveland at 30-1, and let's say 7 picks in the draft are in, and trade news breaks that Cleveland has traded the 8th overall pick and Kevin Love for someone. Who does it have to be to where you're like, hell yes, James is staying?
So it can't be for Kawhi, can it? Because nobody loves going for Kawhi. I think it has to be somebody that would be in the – if LeBron James is GM of the team, somebody he would go get. So I'd put that as one of his boys, whether it be – I don't know how realistic, a Chris Paul – or somebody that LeBron would kind of say himself is in that superstar tier that he believes could come with him, and then they're a real contender. So, again, is it going to happen? I would say very unlikely with the pieces that Cleveland has, but it would have to be somebody that appeases him as much as it would, appease the team in terms of making a contender.
Okay. Do you buy any Kemba Walker buzz? Do you think he fits with LeBron?
I would say he's more realistic.
Actually, let me rephrase the question. If they make a trade and they bring Kemba Walker to Cleveland, are you happier or sadder that more likely or less likely that LeBron stays?
I mean, it's definitely more likely, but at the way the season ended and the vibe he has with Dan Gilbert and the fact you've heard some of the stuff that, you know, his kid's enrolling in an LA high school, he's looking at high schools in Houston. At this point, with the amount of shopping around he appears to have done, along with the fact that Cleveland's roster is pretty tied, even if they were to go out and get somebody like that, you have to lean towards he's leaving.
He seemed checked out.
What do you think? Yeah, put your LeBron psychologist hat on. What are you seeing?
I dislike the Lakers fans that just feel like it's like the people on Twitter in general. The
Lakers fans can get
Well, they're acting like it's their God-given right at this point. Like, well, we'll take LeBron and PG and Kawhi and you know, we'll just do what the team up north is doing. We better just gather all the superstars and
win the next three titles.
Yeah. Blow the conch, and they all show up. It's like, you know, that it might not happen. Like they're hanging banners already in the Staples Center. Obviously, not the Clippers, but
so
yeah, it's a little silly at this point.
From where I sit, Houston is the correct decision. If I'm LeBron and I want to win a couple more titles before it's all said and done, the problem is Houston probably has to move James Harden, I don't say that because of salary. I'm not like a salary cap expert. I'm not doing the math here. I just don't think you can play Harden and LeBron on the same, you know, I know dipshits were saying the exact same thing about Chris Paul and James Harden last year when they signed Chris Paul. Like, what are they doing? You can't play both those guys in crunch time. And Houston made it, you know, figured out how to make it work. I don't think LeBron would like playing with James Harden. And I don't think that relationship I just don't think it can exist. So I think if you're Daryl Morey, I think you got to be ready to pull the plug, find a trade partner for James Harden if you really are going to get LeBron James this offseason. And that makes that kind of tough to happen.
I'll throw a bet. Would you let Paul walk if you can get LeBron?
I'd rather put Paul and LeBron together than LeBron.
Exactly. I think that's what you want. Yeah, I think Daryl Morey, if you're listening to the pod, he follows me, by the way. I don't know if you knew that.
No big deal.
No big deal. Right?
So
we've got some influence here.
He doesn't listen to the pod, as far as I know. But I think if you're the architect and you're trying to construct the Houston championship team, I think you are literally bringing in LeBron James as the alpha on the team, and Chris Paul to be the Robin to his Batman, and you are getting the best you can get for Harden. And thank you for all you've done. Congratulations on your MVP last year, and we appreciate your service. And I think James would want to do this not only because of the implications of winning championships, but he's always kind of had his eye pretty firmly fixed on being a global icon and being, you know, a multi-billionaire, and no better place to do that in the NBA than Houston, which has the eyeballs and marketing opportunities of China. So Houston is a one that I would look at if I were trying to make a Hail Mary at this point, but I don't know. Does that add up to you, Joey?
No, it makes – I mean, I think it's in terms of places that he can go next year and win a championship. I mean, you'd have to have Houston at the top of the list. But if he's able to can he work with Magic Johnson and basically pull some power moves to get a couple of players with the Lakers? They have the space, they have the young assets. you know, I think in LeBron's mind, he's as, even though some of his quote-unquote GM moves for him haven't worked out as well in the past, I think the Lakers more offer that allure of building a roster that suits what he wants, as opposed to he's signing with Houston, and it's kind of basically a foregone conclusion of what the team is. Coupled with the fact that it's LA, coupled with the fact of Magic Johnson being a billionaire in businesses, and he has homes there. You know, from a basketball perspective, is it Houston? But I think LA offers a couple of more appeasing assets of control and money and business and where he lives.
That makes a ton of sense. Any concern though about playing in the shadow of Kobe or Magic Johnson, even?
Timothy Magov.
I don't think, you know, I'm right. Yeah.
He's on the move today. Yeah.
Can you replace Brandon Ingram in the heart of Lakers fans?
There's going to be some toughness there with what, and I mean, I would say, so what young assets are you willing to part with?
I think they all have to go. I don't think you can keep. Mm. I feel like if he goes to the Lakers, he's going to end up with Cleveland 2.0. It's just too many unconventional parts that are available right now that I don't know. I don't know how they fit together. I really don't.
So you're saying he should probably bring JR with him?
Well, if he ever plays another basketball game with J.R. Smith, I will be amazed. I think that relationship died at about 3 seconds left in game one of the finals.
Has there ever been a moment, like, was there a moment in a basketball game in the last 5 years that you just saw and you're like, oh, that's a meme? Like, that, like within microseconds, you're just like, oh, that picture's going to be on the internet for the next 10 years.
Oh yeah, when you think back to the 2018 finals, you're not going to remember that it was the Warriors' third title. You're not going to remember that Durant was the MVP. You are going to remember the J.R. Smith blunder at the end of game one that cost them a chance to get a foothold in the series, for sure.
Oh my God.
Yep.
All right, well, let's wrap it up. We know you're a football guy, and I love the contributions that you've made today to the NBA draft betting market, so thank you so much. We will absolutely ask you back on for football season.
Enjoyed it.
Try to keep some accounts open for the fall.
Yes, please. Yeah, don't get kicked off everywhere.
Been murdered yet. Hopefully, yes. I'll be on then.
Oh, hopefully, betting is legal in your corner of the world, and you'll have more options available to you. So we can get some brilliant football insight when the time comes, and it's going to be sooner than later. We're excited about it. I can't wait to talk football. So, with that, let's wrap up the episode and enjoy NBA draft props.
And yeah, I think what's the next big thing?
Hot dogs is coming in the prop market. Hot dogs, yeah, hot dogs is coming.
Hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
Yeah. So it's a prop better's dream coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Do you know any good hot dog cappers?
Oh, our friend Chris Kelly, who is the king of hot dogs. So any of the hot dogs that I'm getting come from him. So he is.
Okay. All right.
He's got his eye on the market, so he's a guy to look out for, to follow on Twitter, because he'll have some plays out there for sure.
Okay, Chris Kelly, hot dog prop contest. You're on the hot seat, buddy. We're gonna come for you and try to get you to come on and do a fun pod with us heading into the 4th of July.
That'd be a big get.
Yeah, and we'll talk some more soccer on Monday, Andy. That sound good?
That sounds like a plan.
All right, Joey. Thank you again. Awesome. Follow. Where can people find you?
Joey can Detroit too on Twitter, and then I do some gambling props articles for Dynasty Football Factory fantasy website. We got a little bit of gambling stuff that I'll do on there for usually college football futures, and that's a real season wins weekly articles during the season.
Hell yes. Outstanding. Well, thank you again. And look for his Twitter link in the show notes and follow him and get some of this brilliant insight firsthand. And best of luck during the draft and during the rest of the World Cup. And we'll talk to you on Monday.